Paul!
His mother was beside him, holding his hands, her face a gray blob peering at him.
Paul, what's wrong?
You, he said.
I'm here, Paul, she said. It's all right.
What have you done to me?
He demanded. In a burst of clarity, she sent some of the roots in the question, said,
I gave birth to you.
It was, from instinct as much as her own subtle knowledge, the precisely correct answer to calm him. He felt her hands holding him, focused on the dim outline of her face. Certain gene traces in her facial structure were noted in the new way by his onflowing mind. The clues added to other data, and a final summation answer put forward.
Let go of me, he said.
She heard the iron in his voice, obeyed.
Do you want to tell me what's wrong, Paul?
Did you know what you were doing when you trained me?
He asked.
There's no more childhood in his voice, she thought,
and she said,
I hope the thing any parent hopes, that you'd be superior, different.
Different?
She heard the bitterness in his tone, said,
Paul,
You didn't want a son, he said. You wanted a Kwisatz Haderach. You wanted a male Bene Gesserit.
She recoiled from his bitterness.
But, Paul, did you ever consult my father in this?
She spoke gently out of the freshness of her grief.
Whatever you are, Paul, the heredity is as much your father as me.
But not the training, he said. Not the things that awakened the sleeper.
Sleeper?
It's here.
He put a hand to his head and then to his breast.
In me. It goes on and on and on and on and Paul!
She had heard the hysteria edging his voice.
Listen to me, he said. You wanted the Reverend Mother to hear about my dreams. You listen in her place now. I've just had a waking dream. Do you know why?
You must calm yourself, she said.
If there's the spice, he said. It's in everything here. The air, the soil, the food. The geriatric spice. It's like the truthsayer drug. It's a poison.
She stiffened. His voice lowered, and he repeated,
A poison. So subtle, so insidious, so irreversible. It won't even kill you unless you stop taking it. We can't leave Arrakis unless we take part of Arrakis with us.
The terrifying presence of his voice brooked no dispute.
You and the spice, Paul said. The spice changes anyone who gets this much of it. But thanks to you, I could bring the change to consciousness. I don't get to leave it in the unconscious where its disturbance can be blanked out. I can see it.
Paul, I see it, he repeated.
She heard madness in his voice, didn't know what to do. But he spoke again, and she heard the iron control return to him.
We're trapped here.
We're trapped here, she agreed.
And she accepted the truth of his words. No pressure of the Bene Gesserit, no trickery or artifice could pry them completely free from Arrakis. The spice was addictive. Her body had known the fact long before her mind awakened to it.
So here we live out our lives, she thought, on this hell planet. The place is prepared for us, if we can evade the Harkonnens. And there's no doubt of my course. A broodmare, preserving an important bloodline for the Bene Gesserit clan.
I must tell you about my waking dream,
Paul said. Now there was fury in his voice.
To be sure you accept what I say, I'll tell you first I know you'll bear a daughter, my sister, here on Arrakis.
Jessica placed her hands against the tent floor, pressed back against the curving fabric wall to still a pang of fear. She knew her pregnancy could not show yet. Only her Bene Gesserit training had allowed her to read the first faint signals of her body, to know of the embryo only a few weeks old.
Only to serve,
Jessica whispered, clinging to the Bene Gesserit motto.
We exist only to serve.
We'll find a home among the Fremen, Paul said, where your Missionaria Protectiva has bought us a bolt hole.
They've prepared a way for us in the desert, Jessica told herself. But how can he know of the Missionaria Protectiva?
She found it increasingly difficult to subdue her terror at the overpowering strangeness in Paul. He studied the dark shadow of her, seeing her fear and every reaction with his new awareness as though she were outlined in blinding light. A beginning of compassion for her crept over him.
The things that can happen here I cannot begin to tell you, he said. I cannot even begin to tell myself, although I've seen them. This sense of the future, I seem to have no control over it. The thing just happens. The immediate future, say a year, I can see some of that. A road as broad as our central avenue on Caladan. Some places I don't see. Shadowed places. As though it went behind a hill.
And again he thought of the surface of a blowing kerchief.
And there are branchings.
He fell silent as memory of that seeing filled him. No prescient dream, no experience of his life, had quite prepared him for the totality with which the veils had been ripped away to reveal naked time. Recalling the experience, he recognized his own terrible purpose, the pressure of his life spreading outward like an expanding bubble, time retreating before it. Jessica found the tense glow tab control, activated it. Dim green light drove back the shadows, easing her fear. She looked at Paul's face, his eyes, the inward stare, and she knew where she had seen such a look before, pictured in records of disasters, on the faces of children who experienced starvation or terrible injury. The eyes were like pits, mouth a straight line, cheeks indrawn.
It's the look of terrible awareness, she thought, of someone forced to the knowledge of his own mortality.
He was, indeed, no longer a child. The underlying import of his words began to take over in her mind, pushing all else aside. Paul could see ahead, a way of escape for them.
There's a way to evade the Harkonnens, she said.
The Harkonnens, he sneered. Put those twisted humans out of your mind.
He stared at his mother, studying the lines of her face in the light of the glow tab. The lines betrayed her. She said,
You shouldn't refer to people as humans without...
Don't be so sure you know where to draw the line, he said. We carry our past with us. And, mother mine, there's a thing you don't know and should. We are Harkonnens.
Her mind did a terrifying thing. It blanked out, as though it needed to shut off all sensation. But Paul's voice went on at that implacable pace, dragging her with it.
When next you find a mirror, study your face. Study mine now. The traces are there if you don't blind yourself. Look at my hands, the set of my bones. And if none of this convinces you, then take my word for it. I've walked the future. I've looked at a record. I've seen a place. I have all the data. We're Harkonnens.
A renegade branch of the family, she said. That's it, isn't it? Some Harkonnen cousin who...
You're the Baron's own daughter, he said,
and watched the way she pressed her hands to her mouth.
The Baron sampled many pleasures in his youth, and once permitted himself to be seduced, but it was for the genetic purposes of the Bene Gesserit, by one of you.
The way he said you struck her like a slap, but it set her mind to working, and she could not deny his words. So many blank ends of meaning in her past reached out now and linked. The daughter the Bene Gesserit wanted. It wasn't to end the old Atreides-Harkonnen feud, but to fix some genetic factor in their lines.
What?
She groped for an answer. As though he saw inside her mind, Paul said,
They thought they were reaching for me, but I'm not what they expected, and I've arrived before my time, and they don't know it.
Jessica pressed her hands to her mouth.
Great mother! He's the Kwisatz Haderach!
She felt exposed and naked before him, realizing then that he saw her with eyes from which little could be hidden. And that, she knew, was the basis of her fear.
You're thinking I'm the Kwisatz Haderach, he said. Put that out of your mind. I'm something unexpected.
I must get word out to one of the schools, she thought. The mating index may show what has happened.
They won't learn about me until it's too late, he said.
She sought to divert him, lowered her hands, and said,
We'll find a place among the Fremen?
The Fremen have a saying they credit to Shai-Hulud, Old Father Eternity, he said. They say, Be prepared to appreciate what you meet.
And he thought,
Yes, mother mine, among the Fremen. You'll acquire the blue eyes and a callus beside your lovely nose from the filter tube to your stillsuit. And you'll bear my sister, St. Alia of the Knife.
If you're not the Kwisatz Haderach, Jessica said,
What, you couldn't possibly know, he said. You won't believe it until you see it.
And he thought, I'm a seed. He suddenly saw how fertile was the ground into which he had fallen, and with this realization, the terrible purpose filled him, creeping through the empty place within, threatening to choke him with grief. He had seen two main branchings along the way ahead. In one, he confronted an evil old baron and said,
"Hello, Grandfather." The thought of that path and what lay along it sickened him. The other path held long patches of gray obscurity, except for peaks of violence. He had seen a warrior religion there, a fire spreading across the universe with the Atreides' green and black banner, waving at the head of fanatic legions drunk on spice liquor. Gurney Halleck and a few others of his father's men, a pitiful few, were among them, all marked by the hawk symbol from the shrine of his father's skull.
"I can't go that way," he muttered. "That's what the old witches of your schools really want."
"I don't understand you, Paul," his mother said. He remained silent, thinking like the seed he was, thinking with the race consciousness he had first experienced as terrible purpose. He found that he no longer could hate the Bene Gesserit or the Emperor or even the Harkonnens. They were all caught up in the need of their race to renew its scattered inheritance, to cross and mingle and infuse their bloodlines in a great new pooling of genes. And the race knew only one sure way for this, the ancient way, the tried and certain way that rolled over everything in its path, jihad.
"Surely I cannot choose that way," he thought.
But he saw again in his mind's eye the shrine of his father's skull, and the violence with the green and black banner waving in its midst. Jessica cleared her throat, worried by his silence.
"Then the Fremen will give us sanctuary?"
He looked up, staring across the green-lighted tent at the inbred patrician lines of her face.
"Yes," he said. "That's one of the ways."
He nodded.
"Yes. They'll call me Muad'Dib, the one who points the way. Yes, that's what they'll call me."
And he closed his eyes, thinking,
"Now, my father, I can mourn you."
And he felt the tears coursing down his cheeks. Book 2. Muad'Dib.
When my father, the Padishah Emperor, heard of Duke Leto's death and the manner of it, he went into such a rage as we had never before seen. He blamed my mother and the compact forced on him to place a Bene Gesserit on the throne. He blamed the guild and the evil old baron. He blamed everyone in sight, not excepting even me, for he said I was a witch like all the others. And when I sought to comfort him, saying it was done according to an older law of self-preservation, to which even the most ancient rulers gave allegiance, he sneered at me and asked if I thought him a weakling. I saw then that he had been aroused to this passion, not by concern over the dead duke, but by what that death implied for all royalty. As I look back on it, I think there may have been some prescience in my father, too, for it is certain that his line and Muad'Dib's shared common ancestry.
In My Father's House, by the Princess Irulan.
"Now Harkonnen shall kill Harkonnen," Paul whispered.
He had awakened shortly before nightfall, sitting up in the sealed and darkened still tent. As he spoke, he heard the vague stirrings of his mother where she slept against the tent's opposite wall. Paul glanced at the proximity detector on the floor, studying the dials illuminated in the blackness by phosphor tubes.
"It should be night soon," his mother said. "Why don't you lift the tent shades?"
Paul realized then that her breathing had been different for some time, that she had lain silent in the darkness until certain he was awake.
"Lifting the shades wouldn't help," he said. "There has been a storm. The tent's covered by sand. I'll dig us out soon."
"No sign of Duncan yet?"
"None."
Paul rubbed absently at the ducal signet on his thumb, and a sudden rage against the very substance of this planet which had helped kill his father set him trembling.
"I heard the storm begin," Jessica said.
The undemanding emptiness of her words helped restore some of his calm. His mind focused on the storm as he had seen it begin through the transparent end of their still tent, cold dribbles of sand crossing the basin, then runnels and tails furrowing the sky. He had looked up to a rock spire, seen it change shape under the blast, becoming a low, cheddar-colored wedge. Sand funneled into their basin had shadowed the sky with dull curry, then blotted out all light as the tent was covered. Tent bows had creaked once as they accepted the pressure, then silence, broken only by the dim bellows wheezing of their sand snorkel pumping air from the surface.
"Try the receiver again," Jessica said.
"No use," he said.
He found his still suit's water tube and its clip at his neck, drew a warm swallow into his mouth, and he thought that here he truly began an Arrakeen existence, living on reclaimed moisture from his own breath and body. It was flat and tasteless water,
but it soothed his throat. Jessica heard Paul drinking, felt the slickness of her own stillsuit clinging to her body, but she refused to accept her thirst. To accept it would require awakening fully into the terrible necessities of Arrakis, where they must guard even fractional traces of moisture, hoarding the few drops in the tent's catch pockets, begrudging a breath wasted on the open air. So much easier to drift back down into sleep.